Right. In my previous presentations, I have a few too many slides, so this one is going to be just enough that we can have an introduction and then we can start playing with data. All right, so mantle potential temperature, that's the tutorial I was asked to share with you. And just to summarize a little bit what we talked before, let me see, is this working? Yeah. So the upper mantle decompresses at mid-ocean ridges and melts, and that is what we are going to call ambient mantle. Ambient mantle is basically mid-ocean ridge mantle, not affected by any thermal anomaly. And then in places we have an upwelling from the deep earth, we're going to have a mantle plume, and we will expect, conceptually, to have a higher temperature there. Make sense? Yes or no? Okay, so we have simple adiabatic decompression here. We have adiabatic decompression, but we also have excess temperature. So the goal of the tutorial today is to use Mayer element geochemistry to calculate those temperatures. Okay, so what do we define as mantle potential temperature? This is the same diagram I showed before, the same one that we make with the phase plot. And basically, you can imagine that basically we are writing this adiabat in the mantle. We're basically going with the mantle together, and we face this boundary here, this boundary condition that is the solidus. When we reach the solidus, things start happening. What happens when this parcel of pyrrhotite hits the solidus? What is the key thing that happens there? Start melting, yes. And in order to melt something, we need to invest energy. That's going to lower temperature. So the temperature that we will see in the surface will never be the same as a potential. So what we want to know is basically, in order for us to basically get rid of all that noise that melting is putting in the data, we want to reach that temperature. We want to know what was the temperature in the moment that the mantle crossed the solidus. So, and that's what is called mantle potential temperature. Basically, we can add back that temperature, and we can understand basically what is the temperature of the mantle if it raises adiabatically without melting. All right, so what are the different thermodynamic parameters that you need to understand? We have these convective geotherms. Basically, there's upwelling of the mantle, and there is going to be things that are going to influence in this, you know, different temperature. You need to understand that there's going to be a geothermal gradient, and there's also going to be a conductive, both convective and conductive, that goes back to your talk on geodynamics. So we already have enough information on this, but basically there's going to be these two different processes going on. You're going to be losing heat by convection. You're going to be losing heat also by conductivity. And if we backtrack that and also get back the fact that we invested energy to melt, we will be able to calculate a mantle potential temperature. All right, and those will be like hotter adiabats there. All right, so let's get into how we calculate mantle potential temperatures. Okay, there is a lot of rules here. This is like Kanani's talk again. Most people, for many, many, many decades, have focused their career on doing experiments pyrrhotite. Why? Because it's the most abundant rock that melts in the upper mantle. And for many years, we all make the assumption that that was the only thing that was down there. So unfortunately, we can only work with samples that were melted from a pyrrhotite source, because that's the thermodynamics we understand. Hopefully in maybe 10, 20 years, but that's a lot of time. I don't want to wait 20 years, maybe 5 to 10 years. Hopefully there are more experiments and we can do this kind of modeling with other sources. So we need to select our samples. When you go to a talk of a petrologist, they will say that they selected sample that only crystallize olivine. So the first part of the tutorial, I'm going to try to show you how to select samples that only crystallize olivine. We need to have some constraints on water and CO2, and we need to have a really good idea or a really good measurement of the state of oxidation, and I'm going to explain why. And the source must be a peridotite. To get a little bit into the details of how to separate a peridotite and other sources, it's a little bit more than what we can do in the tutorial today. So today, the samples that I'm going to, you guys are going to be working, they were already pre-selected basically using all these different parameters to hopefully the closest we can to approximate the sources of peridotite. So we went over this. I don't think there is necessity to go over this, but basically the an accumulated fractional melt is basically a primary magma. And our goal today is to model this. And we're going to be basing our tutorial on this model. It's called PRIMELT. And you guys have the paper together also. So after the tutorial today, please go and read the paper. The paper not only gives you all the theoretical background, but also gives you a really good, there is a README document at the end that you can use to basically use the software better. Because generally, whenever I have done a tutorial in my life, I'm sitting down like you guys, and I probably understand like 10 or 20% of what people are saying, and then I need to go later and figure it out. So it's going to be your homework to read this paper and kind of try to repeat what we did today. All right, so what do we say at a sample that only crystallized olivine? So this is an example from the Caribbean Large Ignis Province. So when we did a lot of work to select samples that they look only controlled by olivine, so it's going to be the little tail here. And then we like don't use anything else. And that's like a little sad because, you know, like I do field work and I do analysis. You do a lot of work in the field and you spend a lot of time in the lab to collect data. And then you end up collecting data that is not going to be used, so it's kind of sad. But that's the reality, okay? Like we need to, we can only use samples that crystallize olivine because, again, the thermodynamics are really simple. Remember the iron magnesium partition, so it needs to be simple. All right. You also need to have an idea of water content, because if there is water, remember what happened when water goes into the source, things melt more, so you can have a high melt fraction because of water contents rather than temperature. So if you have an idea that the source had a lot of water, then you cannot use this. This software or algorithm is for only for dry or relatively dry melts. It's very important that you know the state of oxidation. There are different ways to do it. Mostly what people are doing now is analyzing the iron 2 and iron 3 partition directly on melt, and you can do that by using a particle accelerator. So you can see the complexity here. You cannot just only measure the major elements. You need to know water and the state of oxidation. So to get a really good calculation, you need a lot of measurements. So that's why geochemists are useful, because they make those measurements. There are ways that you can play around. This is an example of using experiments from melting a carbonated source. So if your samples plot in this direction, like where the arrows go, you cannot use them. So basically, these are all filters. Now, this software have these filters embedded already. So you can put whatever you want there, and then the software is going to put a red flag that says, oh, carbonated source, sorry, your sample suck. Or, sorry, this is being taped, I should not say that. But all these filters are embedded there. If there is fractionation of something else but olivine, there's going to be another red flag that says outjive fractionation or plagioclase. No, I think mostly says outjive fractionation warning. So all those red flags are in the software already. So we're just going little by little into what is embedded in the software. But basically, my advice is that you collaborate with a petrologist or a geochemist if you're doing work on this. But anybody can use it because there are all these useful warnings. This is an example of how people measure with particle accelerator. They shoot a beam here, and then they can get the separation of this spectra here tells you what is the state of oxidation. So this is really important, because even though there's going to be a red flag for fractionation, or it's going to be another red flag for a source that is has volatiles or whatever, the state of oxidation that basically, or the partition between iron 2 and iron 3 is something that you must measure or you must proxy. This is like, this needs, you need to have control on this. And this is really important because the iron magnesium exchange is FeO-MgO, is not iron total. What geochemists report in most databases is total iron. Total iron is Fe2O3 and FeO. So we need to figure out a way, what is that partition? So this is a parameter that needs to be measured. And the way Claude Hertzberg and Paul Asimov try to proxy this is that they use the relationship between Fe2O3 and titanium, and we're going to use that today. This is not ideal. This is a 2008 paper. This is 2018. 10 years happened, and we still have not solved this problem. So we're going to use the same partition that was based on the fractionation sequence that you see here, but we still, one of the big unsolved problems is what the state of oxidation of the mantle, and we had Cottrell and Kelly had done a significant effort to advance on this, but we still do not know the state of oxidation of large igneous provinces or the state of oxidation of most intraplane magmas. But today we're going to use this. Basically, samples that are in this trend that basically do this, we're going to do a Fe2O3 to titanium of 1, and that's already in the precom 5 file, so you didn't even need to think about it. I already gave you those values. And if they have this, iron enrichments, we're going to use a Fe2O3 to titanium of 0.5. Please read the paper. There is a whole description of what this really means. For the purpose of today's tutorial, what you need to understand is this. This is the same. Yeah?
I do have a question, though. You need the entire trend to be able to figure out which of the two cases you are.
So you
can't do it with just a few samples.
No, you can't. No, that's why the first part of the tutorial is taking all the data from the Onton Java Plateau and look at the trends and, you know. Why the state of oxidation is super important, because this is the same set of data. This is from the Cape Verde and the Canary Islands. It's the same data. One was modeled with water and oxidized, and one was modeled dry and with reduced conditions. And you move from a mantle potential temperature of 1450 to a mantle potential temperature of below 1400. So if you don't know the state of oxidation, suddenly you can start finding plumes when they don't exist, or vice versa. This is the biggest source of uncertainty when we make these calculations, state of oxidation, that influence the partition of iron. So this is the way Primal works is that there is this forward modeling of periodotype petrology. Basically, this is based on experiments, and there is a composition here, and in this triangle or in these gray areas is where all these magmas from melting a periodotype reside. So there is a forward modeling of melting. And then we add that an inverse model where we add or subtract olivine until the melt fraction is the same in all of these different major element space. Basically, what the software is going to do is to start adding olivine or subtracting olivine until the melt fraction is the same everywhere. That's how this method calculates a primary magma. Is everybody kind of following me here a little bit? What do I mean the melt fraction is the same everywhere? That means that we add olivine until the melt fraction is 0.27% or whatever happened in all these different space projection spaces. So you don't need to do that. That's basically something that is automatic done by the software. That's the big assumption behind this software. Other ways to calculate primary magmas is that you add olivine until you resemble the composition of the mantle. So what is the phosphorite content of the mantle? Anybody? 90. Okay. That's the average composition of the mantle today. But if what if you had an Archean comariite? 94, 95, maybe 93. So we really don't know what the composition of the mantle is. So the other ways to calculate this, you're making an assumption of what is the phosphoric content of the mantle. What is cool about this is that this other way to do it is that actually it will give you back the phosphoric content of your melt, so then you can actually compare it with your real data. Okay, and then again, that adding or subtracting of olivine is very simple because the partition of FeO-MgO is something that we understand really well. Now, the fact that we are working with FeO is telling us again, is giving us that information that why knowing the state of oxidation is important. Because when geochemists report a chemical analysis, they either do Fe2O3 total or iron FeO total. We don't really know that partition anymore. And everything is actually is just FeO. So we need to like know what proportion of our iron is FeO. All right, and then basically, once you calculate the primary magma, you can use this equation. And that's the software has it embedded there. But it's this equation over here. And that's based on experimental calibrations. Once you have magnesium, you have a temperature. All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to work on this data here. All right, so let's start by first opening the first file that says OJP tutorial. And so it's this one here. So please open that file in Excel or whatever. This is a plotting exercise. So if you want to plot in MATLAB, you can open it in MATLAB. If you want to plot on, I don't know, R, you can open it in R. Just open whatever, open the software, whatever is your preferred plotting software. And I downloaded that program from the GeoRock database very fast, just very, very fast. I'm going to show you here the GeoRock database. So this is a very useful website. And that didn't come. That's interesting.
You have to close the presentation, most likely.
Okay. All right, that's what it is. Yeah. Here. There. So I downloaded that database from the GeoRock database, or that data set from the GeoRock database. So here we have data from a lot of different settings pre-compiled. So you can come here and, for example, you can go to different geologic settings. So they have Archean cratons or convergent margins. Let's click that. They have every single arc of the planet there. So this is a very useful database. So as part of the tutorial, I wanted to show you that there's resources are out there. And all right, so let's go and look at the data from the Onton Java Plateau. And I think I have, yeah.
Esteban?
Yeah?
Why did you pick Onton Java?
I picked Onton Java because Onton Java is a large English province. Is one of the ones that we're going to use later, and has really nice olivine trend.
Is it an exception?
Because?
Potentially on the amount of partial melting.
Yeah, but we're looking at all large English provinces. They all have large amounts of partial melting. And you know, we want to pick things that work, too. All right, so one thing that you can do is let me run this script here. So you can plot magnesium versus calcium and magnesium versus titanium. So this is the whole set of data, more or less. I cleaned it a little bit because there were some samples that had alteration, but I removed those. So this is, we can also do iron. I can add iron here. So titanium and iron behave very similar. You see the trend? Flat, and then something changed. It's kind of flat and something changed. So let's make some observations here. You don't need to be a geochemist to make some observations. What do we see in this data? Let's talk about magnesium. We start with relatively high magnesium, when in low magnesium. All right, kind of in this direction. Why I'm plotting magnesium there is because, you know, the most mafic things are going to be closer to the composition of a metal that came from the mantle. And then as fractionation proceeds, we're going to have less and less magnesium. So what do we see in those three diagrams? Yeah, something is happening. More or less at what magnesium content things start changing? Something like 8 and 8.5. So we have a very relatively homogeneous trend, and then at 8.5, you know, we have iron enrichment, titanium enrichment, and then calcium start going down. So what is happening here is that we have a relatively simple fractionation of a phase, and then things start becoming more complicated. And what we have is basically what is called an olivine control trend here. And then at a certain point, another phase starts crystallizing that takes calcium. And it's not taking titanium, and that's why titanium gets enriched. It's not taking iron, that's why iron goes up. So that phase is plagioclase. At a certain point, plagioclase starts crystallizing. So what we want to do is we want to restrict our analysis to these samples that only crystallize olivine. So how I know that they only crystallize olivine? There are many ways to look into that. You can look at your thin sections. You can model fractional crystallization with melts. Or you can simply look at the composition of minerals, and you will see how easy is to understand this. So the same data I showed you before from the Onton Java Plateau, the red guys are the only ones, the guys that only crystallize olivine, and the blue ones is when we start having crystallization of plagioclase. So the composition of olivine sits someplace here. It actually goes from 30 all the way to like 50, whatever. You know, it goes in that direction. So when you start crystallizing olivine, basically as crystallization progresses, the melt is going to move away from the olivine axis. So if we only have olivine here, this is going to continue going forever until we'll exhaust melt to zero. Now, at a certain point, the melt gets saturated with other phases like calcium, and the temperature goes down. So what plagioclase plugs someplace there. No iron, non-titanium or iron in the plagioclase. There is a lot, significant amount of calcium in the plagioclase. So now we have one vector projecting from here, and now we have another component. So what happened is the sum of these two end members will produce a new vector in this direction. Yes?
So I'm confused. The red data are not basalts, they're just pure olivine?
No, these are basalts that only crystallize olivine. No plagioclase, yes.
Even like microcrystals?
That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter because microcrystal means that they crystallize in the surface. So that these are crystals that are basically being subtracted from the liquid or accumulating in the liquid. Okay, so. All right, so that's how you select for that, that's how you select for olivine only. And you're only going to use these guys here. So you're basically going to throw away 85 to 95 or 99% of your data now. And there are some problems about that we can discuss too. Why, you know, when we do the selections, we're going to end with like, you know, a perspective that is biased to the only samples that behave like this. All right, so any questions about how to select this? Yes. No. This is a liquid. This is a melt. It's a lava that crystallize or accumulate olivine.
Yeah, I mean, you have a basalt sample. You have the basalt and matrix.
Yeah, but the matrix is a glass or a glassy microlith.
They follow this trend, but
You're not crystallizing all of it.
You only crystallize all of it here, yes. At this point, a certain point, about 8.5 or 9% it starts crystallizing plagioclase.
So in the bubble condition, we consider both the glass and the crystals. The bubble condition of those blue points and red points is the same.
No. It's fractional crystallization. Every crystal that crystallizes, the composition of the liquid change. Is not equilibrium crystallization. If you have a magma chamber that is always in equilibrium, yes, but this is fractional crystallization. And just to answer Laurent's question, that titanium and iron behave very similar, and you see that it's having that enrichment in that direction. So we can use a titanium to Fe2O3 or 0.5.
I was going to ask. How do you know, and if it matters, that your olivine is at 30 mgU?
Oh, you make analysis. You need to analyze anything. It's actually more than that. It's more like 45 or something. And every olivine is going to be different. So it's going to be a series of olivines changing in composition. I just put one there just to make simple the explanation. But basically, the plagioclase is going to be a series of plagioclase. Olivine is going to be a series of olivine. And then you can draw a triangle. Between melt plagioclase and olivine, and the triangle will define what you see. All right, this is in very simple terms, we went over fractional crystallization, and the reason is just, you know, to try to learn about the selection. Now we need to go and do the second tutorial, or the second part of the tutorial, that is using this software to calculate mantle potential temperatures. The file is TP tutorial. And that's a compilation of more OIB and large news province data. And these are the two papers that basically the compilation is coming from. The original references are in that file too. What we're going to do is now there is a file with data and there is a file with the Excel macro. Okay. So what you guys are going to do is you're going to open this one called Primal 3 Tutorial. So everybody should open the Primal 3 Tutorial, please. And some friend is going to say, you just say yes or enable macros. Because if you don't do that, it's not going to work. All right, and then there are going to be a series of Excel sheets here. They're examples. You see that Mauna Kea, Onton Java Plateau, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And here's where you're going to paste the data. You're basically from the pre-compiled file, you're going to copy paste the data there. Those are the samples that were already filtered for only crystallization. Those are actual lava compositions, not primary magmas. And you can go and see, we can go and see maybe the Mauna Kea example here. So everybody please go and click Mauna Kea, and basically this is just one calculation. You input the major element here, major element composition, and look, the iron has a little star. You see it? That means that it's total iron. You need to input this as total iron. And then we're going to play with the partition of that total iron here. We're going to, in this case, we're going to fix that ratio to 1. If you have measurements that are better than fixing the ratio, if you have measurements, then you can do the Fe2 to total iron ratio here. These needs to come from sayings or something like that. So you have the option to actually include the data. And then... I mentioned that there's going to be all these flags that tell you if there are errors or there is algebraic fractionation or something. So this example have no errors. And we're going to be focusing on the accumulated fractional melt. There is a batch melt solution, but the accumulated fractional melt is the one that matters. And then basically we have all these subtractions and addition of olivine here. So it's going to do a lot of different iterations here until it finds the right solution. To learn a little bit more about the details of how this works, you just need to go and read the paper. But for the sake of the tutorial, this is the lava we input, and this is the primary magma. See how high that primary magma magnesium is compared to the lava? Look at the lava, 8%. Well, the primary magma is actually something like 18%. And that basically translates on a mantle potential temperature of 1,500 degrees Celsius. So what I want to do now is, for the sake of time, why if we separate in groups and we have a team that will work on MORP, a team that will work on large igneous provinces, and a team that is going to work on ocean island basalts. So who wants to be the team MORP? Okay. So this area there is going to be the team. Why are you shaking your head? Okay, so you guys are going to go and subtract the MORP information. And let's do like, let me see where we are. So there is the one that says TP tutorial. And there is a tab that says MORP, one that says OIB, and one that says LIP. So for the MORP one, or actually let's do just one example. We're going to take these three MORP values here. And I'm going to copy this. And I'm going to go to the macro that was written by Paul Asimo. And so you have the pressure, everything looks nice and happy. And let me see how this works. So once you copy paste that, you are going to highlight the samples you want to run. Do you see what I did? Just this. Is everybody on the same page with me? You highlight them, and then you click that thing. And we have some results there. That was really, really fast. Yesterday, when I was working on this at night, like at midnight, it didn't go that fast. But there it is. So those three samples that I put from MORP there is telling you that there is no errors in the input, that basically is telling you this is an olivine control sample from a peridotite source. It's giving you basically a lot of great information here. I care about the AFM, that is aggregated fractional melting. I don't care about the batch melting because they are not realistic. And you go in this direction, it gives you the composition of the primary magma. It tells you how much olivine was added. The new primary magma is here, and the mantle potential temperatures are there. And also tells you that the phosphorite content in equilibrium with those melts is about.
What's the difference between old and new TP?
There is a 2008 model versus 2018 or 17. I don't know what is the one that is. That's just that. It's just a more refined uncertainty in the equation and stuff like that. It's the same. How many? Yeah, 20 degrees is nothing.
I have no experience how big I should assume the error bars are on the.
If you want to be honest, the olivine thermometer is something like 15, 20 degrees, just the thermometer. And if you propagate and you're really serious about the propagation, 30 to 50 degrees could be the uncertainty. So you need to run a lot of this and calculate like an average and then have an idea of the uncertainty. Yes, just 1 second. So what we're gonna do is the team MORP here are gonna copy paste all the MORP data and make calculations. I need a team large igneous province. Who wants to be the large igneous province people? Okay, that area here. You are gonna work with large igneous provinces. You get, you know, to make it faster, you can do the Onton Java Plateau, or somebody else can do so. The team is there. And now the rest of you guys in this area and that area were with OIBs. So maybe you guys can do some, and you guys can do some, because what I want is that we start comparing data, all right?
What happens when you have a bug?
When, what?
Oh. Do you need to like drag some of like the calculations or something?
Let me see what. Let's go to. Go to the working. No, you should not do any of that stuff. You go to the working. That's what you copy paste.
This one, you?
That's where you.
Yeah, so I copied and pasted.
And then you selected it?
Yeah, and I.
But you. They were
selected.
Can you select it again? Okay.
Oh, weird. Maybe you have to like. You can't have it just selected after
you. I noticed that. You need to remember, guys, to select to highlight what you want. If you don't highlight it and you click this, then it crashes. Yeah. If you put too many things, it crashes, and it crashes your whole computer. Like if you want to run everything at the same time, it may. It depends on how good your computer is, though. Like my other computer, not the ones that I use when I travel, I can run way more things there. So how is the team MORP doing here?
It's going.
Still going. Yeah, we get some forbidden something.
Where do you say forbidden? Oh, yeah.
Okay, but is that the batch result, batch melting, or?
Yeah,
forget about the mouse. The batch melting doesn't matter. Yeah, so then in that, for IFN, then in that case, you need to delete it. That doesn't work. And actually, if you left it there, you will see that it may have an anomalous temperature or something weird. Yeah. Because when pyroxene fractionate, it will change the iron content. Forbidden means that you are in. Okay, let me. Let's go back to the presentation. One second, and then I will be back to you. Okay, any of you got like a forbidden? It sounds terrible. It sounds like you did something really bad, you know, like forbidden. So, any of you got like a forbidden warning? No? You got a forbidden warning. So the forbidden means that it added olivine in a space that there is no solutions. Okay, so it put you here, and here, prototype melts do not live there. So it's basically, it's a failure in the algorithm, yeah, basically it doesn't work. That sample didn't work. Now, that generally is for this exercise, it's probably gonna be the batch melting. If you look at the AFM, probably it doesn't have a forbidden. And whenever you have a forbidden, you cannot use that, okay? It's forbidden. Sorry?
But it still stays no error.
It depends on what error is, because it may be, let me see.
I don't know, it's calculated.
It's doing
I didn't
stuff.
Know I'm not supposed to do too many at a time, so sorry.
Well, it's good. It's fine that you're doing too many at the time, because if you have a better computer, then you're going to solve all the problems. Okay, so how is the team launching this province with the calculations? Are you guys very, you know, like, feeling the energy of the mantle there? It's pretty hot there?
Yeah. So everything works fine. My question is more of a, like, chemical thing.
Yeah.
So here's the magnesium concentrate. Mm-hmm. And this is our phosphorite composition.
Yeah.
Why do we care about this? Because like, this one's telling us a magnesium concentrate.
Okay, that's telling you what is the composition of the residue and the mantle that left behind when that melt came to the surface. So that's the equilibrium olivine. So
right. Yeah, so which one is that? Is it
the No, the phosphorite is the composition of the first olivine crystal in equilibrium.
Wow.
Okay, so it's the crystal of olivine, and that magnesium is the magnesium of
the
melt.
Over.
Of the melt.
Okay.
The phosphorite content is the relative composition between iron and magnesium in an olivine. The most phosphorite, the most magnesium is in the olivine.
Okay.
So it's the proportion
okay.
in the olivine.
Okay.
The other magnesium is the magnesium in the melt.
Okay, thank you.
So in an ideal world, all of the mantle crystal temperatures would be the same for these samples. Is that right or not?
Within a range.
Okay.
So how's the oceanic islands going on down there? Is anybody doing Hawaii?
Yeah, I'm going to Mauna Loa.
You're doing Mauna Loa?
Yeah.
People are like, that's not the one we're supposed to be doing.
What else is new?
It's fine, it's exciting. All right, any other oceanic island that is exciting? Anybody's doing Galapagos? Oh, okay. I don't feel a lot of excitement on the oceanic island part. Yes. Pressure. Put it. You need to put one because you're doing this. It's mantle potential temperature, so it should be in the surface. For Hawaii, use 0.5. Oh no! Just give it. Don't do that. And just put in titanium, the iron to titanium, put 0.5 there.
That's not the ratio measured?
This one. No, just do 0.5. Or you can do whatever you want. It doesn't matter.
No, I don't want to crush because I put something wrong.
Just put 0.5 in the iron to titanium one.
And zero when I don't have the value.
Sorry?
The iron 2 plus to 3 plus?
Well.
I'm not doing that right now.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, because the two ways to put it is you can do iron 2 to total iron,
yeah.
And that could be 0.9.
That's okay. What I have for data.
Where do you have that?
Total iron expressed at Fe2O3.
Yeah, but total iron should be FeO. So you need to convert that to FeO.
Do you know on the top of your head how I convert it?
Yeah, you multiply Fe2O3 times 0.8998.
0.8998.
The FeO. The Fe2O3.
Yeah, so that value.
Yeah, that give you FeO.
Okay, thank you.
Do you know how much more time I have? Oh, really? Okay.
So, have you checked to see, like, if you went from 0.1 to 0.15 for the Fe3 to plus ratio? What kind of error does that create?
The moles reduce the colder temperatures you get. The most oxidized your the other way around. The most reduced, the hottest it is, because you're saying that most of your iron is FeO. So you start basically at a really high FeO, and then you start backtracking olivine, so you're going to have higher MgO to reach the equilibrium. So that's why we really need to have those constraints. Yeah, but she's mostly doing, the last talk I gave, she was doing a lot of wet chemistry.
Yeah, so sometimes finding melting fluids is hard, right?
Yeah, but like I think wet chemistry in cold rocks, it gives a set of oxidation of that melt, but I don't know if really, how can you relate to like a more primitive
composition?
Mm-hmm. So, but look, we need to do something.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need to constrain this one way or another. Like, in the, you know, for a really coarse global thing, I think these assumptions are pretty good, but if you really want to, like, for example, if you want to see difference in Mauna Kea, like, or Mauna Loa, and things.
You want to compare, you know, Hawaii with Galapagos, with Samoa,
or variations of morphs. Like there is intrinsic variations of morph that it could be just state of oxidation.
My computer has an encoder.
Oh, it's making calculations.
So there is no error.
Okay.
And what temperature do I get? How far do I go?
What is the last one?
It's the last two is...
Yeah, keep going that way. TP.
Yeah.
TP nu.
So that's Mauna Loa and that's Mauna Kea.
Yeah, but this is, you want TP there.
Oh, TP, 1578.
It's beautiful.
And what was your Mauna Kea?
60 degrees less.
It's the same temperature, really.
Yeah, but you said it would not work, so I wanted to test it.
Okay, then it worked. Then you proved me wrong.
No, error code, pure actinide source.
Yeah, see? We can find, Dominique, if we spend some time, we can find some samples that will work. It's just like, it's probably going to be a little difficult for me to like go over that in the tutorial, but.
So, Brown and Lesher had this paper in Nature Geoscience where they looked at the peroxenite peridotite melting, and I wonder if it's going to be difficult to sort of take, and they have their own code that they put in for a mixed topology mantle melting.
Okay.
And they were looking at basically melting of Iceland and Greenland.
But difficult to do, what is the application to?
So, of course, exactly something like this, right, where you have a mixed topology.
To try to calculate a temperature?
To calculate.
Yeah, well, it will require doing all this forward modeling. It's so complicated.
So I think this was like 2014, what I remember.
And unfortunately, also, like when we talk about peroxenides, it's not like you have a unique peroxenide member that you can like Hawaii. That if even in the stuff that's supposed to be peroxenide, needs to be fairly hot too.
Well, it depends, and then it depends on whether it's peroxenide or eclogite, right?
Well, I think. Generally, like petrologists like to put everything into the peroxenite. I always have this discussions with Bob and Suke because they don't like the peroxenite and they want to call everything eclogite. Yes.
So all of those checks that you were talking about earlier to see if your composition can work with this code, is that just built into you pressing?
Yes, everything is there.
Okay. So you don't have to do,
No. So what the data that I'm giving you was already filtered for olivine and all and samples that work.
Okay.
So what I'm giving you is primary things that work because I didn't want it to.
You've tried them already.
Yeah, from those papers. All right, how are we doing here? Are you guys done with all the calculations? So is Team Morph done? All right, what about like all the large Higgins provinces? Have you processed all the data? So what if we do something? So Team Morph, calculate an average morph temperature and one sigma or two sigma, one standard deviation. Give me a plus minus. And can you do the same? Calculate an average for the Onton Java Plateau or whatever you want to give me, or give me an average of all large Higgins provinces. Calculate an average and one sigma there. How you calculate error? Well, to that uncertainty, you probably need to propagate the uncertainty on the thermometer and the fact that some people only like to sample with olivine like me and stuff like that. Yes?
Can you explain what does that mean by TP old,
TP
new?
TP old is an old model from a 2008. TP new is from the new paper. They are very similar.
You mean different models, different
techniques? The new model is a little more refined.
Okay.
And that's what is new. TP. TP is mantle potential temperature.
TP new?
TP new. You want to be in the new side of that. You don't want the old. Sorry?
What is TP?
T is the olivine liquidus temperature. Okay, so that's the temperature that, you know, basically the olivine in equilibrium with a melt will give you. All right, so what is the what is the average morp temperature? Okay, morp. What is the TP? 13? Plus minus? 13. 17, sure. We're so good with uncertainty here. All right. What about, like, do you have a total largeness province, or do you want to give me the Onton Java Plateau? What do you guys, what is the team largeness province doing there?
Everything.
Everything. And you have different averages and stuff? Okay, let's just do OJP. What do you have on the Onto Java Plateau? 15, 26. 15?
26.
26. Plus minus what?
I need to
find a It doesn't matter. Let's forget about that. Let's just do the average, because we're going to look at the data later. Okay, who has Hawaii? Hawaii. What do you have in Hawaii? 15 what? You have Samoa. What do you have in Samoa?
15,
okay. More than 1,500, okay. What do you have in Samoa? 1434. So, see? Samoa is not as hot as Hawaii. So, we already have some things here for a paper. North Atlantic. Who did North Atlantic? That's hot. Anybody in the team largeness province? You did North Atlantic or East Greenland, West Greenland, whatever I call it? No? All right. Any other oceanic island that you guys run? I just got Samoa. I need another place. Nobody care about Galapagos?
I have
what do you have?
Narrow.
Okay, what is the temperature, the average, more or less?
14.
Four Galapagos?
Narrow.
Oh, for the Canaries. So Canaries are even colder. Where are Canaries? I don't know how you... Canary Islands. 14, you said? All right. In terms of, well, all these samples have silica more than 45 weight percent. So even if they have, even if they are alkaline, they are not silicon, they're saturated. Because, okay, if you can backtrack it, it's going to give you the same information. So it's better to know who ones that you know, because you can start having uncertainty. And then if you don't know how to backtrack it, like if you don't have olivine plus platyclase, whatever, if you just have something that is olivine plus platyclase, where do you backtrack? And if you backtrack here, yeah, that's the ideal case. If you have a beautiful liquid line of descent, you can do a lot of work. Yeah, you can do a lot of, you can be really certain of what you're doing. Sometimes we don't even have that.
So this is more just like a
you're being more careful. You need to be more careful. All right, let's go and look at the data. Unless anybody has a question, we can look at the data a little bit. Yes.
What tells me that the computation that happened somewhere in there was correct?
What tells you that the computation is correct? If you read the paper, the paper includes the code.
No, but I mean,
Yeah, so what they did is, for example, they tested this against MELT, MELT's the family of algorithms, and they tested the result from Primal to the result from MELT, and they get very similar results. And so they do a lot of tests of internal consistency. So, yeah.
Can I repeat that somehow here?
And during the tutorial? I don't know in the Excel macro itself, but
you can just show the this sort of the source code here, and you can.
I guess you.
I'm not,
so if you want to actually, like, let's say if you want to do this in MATLAB or some, for example, or you want to add it to like a aspect and combine the things, I'm pretty sure if you talk with Paul. Paul will be very happy to work this with you. The reason it was done in Excel is because most humans are okay with Excel. Sure. Another thing is that this is not the only model that is out there. There's you can use Keith Butyrka's, or there's Simti has a similar thing, but he that calculates equilibrium temperature, so it's not the same. And what you can do is compare results of different parameterizations there. That's a really valid question, and is you know, is something that I cannot answer because I'm not a I'm happy to share this with you guys, but I'm more an analyst than a computer person. All right, but let's look at results, okay? So what I have here is what you guys compiled there. Of course, you cannot see it. Maybe there. Is that better? Can you see the letters there? More up there? So that's the data that you just calculated. MORP is there. So between 1300 and 1400, you get MORP. Then we have Iceland, Azores, Canaries, so on and so forth. The only really hot spot today is Hawaii. But even these guys are hotter than MORP. The large Inuit provinces are all here, North Atlantic being very hot. And what I did here is that I calculated the these circles here, the radius or the radii, is proportional to the standard error of the mean to calculate averages. And then we have MORP here. So MORP and Azores compare really well. Azores is, of course, a little higher, but it's very similar to MORP. It's the only of the modern hotspots that look like MORP. What do you think the Azores and MORP have very similar temperatures? Exactly. The Azores is like an extension of the ridge. And then after that, what is the next one? If Iceland, yes. So Iceland is down here. But if you see all these guys, so Iceland, the Azores, Canaries, Galapagos, Marquesas, and Samoa, they all share kind of similar temperatures. It's only Hawaii that is really hot. I think that's, no, I'm getting, where are you, Hawaii?
The last
yeah, it's here, but I was trying to figure it out, where is the Hawaii circle? There it is, I think. Yeah, so Hawaii, you know, at certain point, starting comparing with some of the really hot large Inuit provinces.
So why exactly is there a spread of data reaching this point? Is that just uncertainty, or is that a physical
So there are different ways to explain this. Probably they're all wrong. But one way to explain it is that you have a plume, and you have the hot core of the plume. And as you move away from the plume, then the temperature gets diluted. So this temperature could be the hottest, could be the plume center, and then as you cool down is the periphery. And that's kind of a good explanation to go with, like, in a place like the Azores that go all the way to kind of like ambient mantle temperature. So you go from the hottest most part of the plume to ambient mantle. The other one is that there is this uncertainty just based on sample bias.
So the more spread must be the sample bias. Presumably the temperature of the more source is pretty uniform. No?
No, I don't think so. I think that's a really pretty decent range for more temperatures.
Are the Hawaii data from a single volcano?
Hawaii is from Mauna Kea only.
Do you see variations in the different volcanoes?
We only have, I think, data that is good from Mauna Kea because a lot of Hawaii has very low calcium to be modeled this way.
Why is that?
The low calcium is because it's a peroxenite source. Maybe. Yep. Yeah, so water will drop the temperature. Water will drop the temperature. So, yeah, so in the case of the Azores, I don't know how, but they have, yeah. When you actually look at the data to talk about, like, where the value of waters are coming from, there's, you know, the people call them wet spots rather than hot spots. Like the Azores and the Canaries, but there is not a lot of quantifications. You know, the Canary Islands have ignimbrites, silicic ignimbrites, to look like arc, but they're silicon, they're saturated. So there needs to be more water than, let's say, Hawaii. But yeah, so the temperature will drop because of water, too. And no, I think we need to make the calculations. My dream has been for the last decade to be able to calculate, to constrain all these places and redo this again, with more robust constraints. So maybe my dream is going to be true soon. I plotted the same data. Mantle potential temperature versus magnesium, and that's, again, basically when you're talking about mantle potential temperature, you're talking about magnesium content of the primary magma. Not the phosphoric content of olivine, magnesium content of the primary magma.
So is this code, or this Excel macro, then basically checking if the data is suitable to compare online, like you just showed? Because it's just a simple linear trend, right? From magnesium, assuming that your sample fit the criteria that you talked about.
I think the way the macro is built right now is that it will give you a temperature no matter what. Oh. But it's going to give you all these flags. So you need to ask yourself, will I publish a number that has all these flags in it, or will I publish the one that has no flags? And if I want to publish the one with flags, what is my interpretation? Another thing, and really cool thing, is that also, like, that the last primal gives you is a residual composition. Basically, what is the left behind residual? And that this is kind of cool because it's putting morph down here, melted from a spinel peridotite. The large igneous provinces, mostly in the garnet peridotite field, with some exceptions, but mostly in the garnet peridotite field. And then we have the ocean islands, kind of some in the garnet peridotite and some in the spinel peridotite. So that's kind of cool, I think, because, you know, that's another way to, that this is telling you something about what melted to produce that liquid. It makes sense that large igneous provinces have garnet peridotite in the source because they start melting deeper.
So why does it only give the mineral and rock name versus actual elemental information?
Of the source? Because remember, this is if you do a batch melting that is in equilibrium, you can say something about the model composition of the source. But when you have aggregated fractional melting, the final aggregate, you cannot know the exact proportion of what the residue is. You can approximate it, but to be honest, like I really don't know what else can you do with that. I guess you can model trace elements if you have the residue, because then you know what the C sub naught is, and then do a better job modeling the trace elements. But if you want to model trace elements, batch melting generally works really well, and it's easier. No, actually no. This is one of the, the residual lithospheric mantle is one of the sources probably for one of those EM1 or EM2 flavor of isotopes. So the residue is also a fundamental, the upper part is going to be a heterogeneity, but the residue is going to be heterogeneity too. Especially because when you melt a lot the mantle, that's one of the figures that I couldn't show this morning, you're going to have a residue that is very high in iron and very low in magnesium compared to mantle that has not experienced so much melting, and that's going to be more buoyant too. So if there is a chance that you can put it back in the mantle, then maybe there is a seismic signature from recycled cratonic lithosphere that is different from modern day lithosphere. Yes.
I was just going to make a comment on that as well. So it matters what the element you're looking at. So for very incompatible elements like rubidium and strontium, even though the melt fraction is very small, it contains the majority of the atoms. And so that's why we talk about it in terms of crust. But in terms of looking at the major elements, as Esteban was just saying, the residual lithosphere would have a signature in terms of its magnesium and iron content. So isotopically, you would tend to easily see the signature of the melt, whereas it would be harder to kind of see that signature of the residual.
But of course, in terms of dynamics, it might actually be the bigger influence,
right.
What kind of major elements.
If you look at the melt fraction solutions, that's another interesting result from here. I don't know if we can plot it because my program is a little unhappy with some of the results that said no solutions, so I don't know if I can plot it right now. But there is some information about melt fraction here too. And you will see that the Onton-Java plateau or the plateaus, they have an average something like 20% melt fraction. And then when you go to Morphe, it's like 7%. FAFM. That F means melt fraction, AFN means aggregated fractional melting. Let me see, okay. Oh, it's kind of terrible. So I just tried to plot the melt fraction against something that makes sense. I don't know. I was successful here, but the red stuff are still the large igneous provinces, and you can see how they have significant more melt fractions that, you know, Morphe, for example. Some of those morphs are a little high. I'm a little concerned. But it's fine. This is what matters, the fact that these are really high. All right, anybody has more questions? Or you guys are ready to go surfing? Surfing in an ocean of magma.
I have a broad question that relates more to your talk earlier than this, but definitely. You mentioned that I think you said that the creation of more caused depleted mantle, which cools to form oceanic lithosphere. And so when you have a subduction zone, ocean-ocean subduction zone, what is actually melting? Is it the mantle wedge, the depleted mantle that is part of the convection, or is it the cold mantle lithosphere? Or can it be both?
Okay, so if you have an ocean-ocean subduction zone, you likely have no lithospheric mantle there. Okay, so little that thermal erosion is going to take it away. If you have a continental, even in a continental oceanic subduction, I think the corner flow is going to take the lithosphere away. But still, you get it, like in the back arc of Argentina, or in the basin and range and places like that, you get lithospheric mantle scenery. Now the question is like, what is the story behind those xenoliths? Are there lithospheric mantle from, you know, like cratonic mantle, or this is the lithospheric mantle of a terrain that got accreted or something? So it's a little bit complicated in that extent. But what melts is a lot of the mantle in that hot nose melts, but my message during the morning was that in most places, you melt sediments. In some places, you even melt the subducting oceanic crust. Yeah, okay.
So you mentioned that you thought all of the sediment on the subducting plate ended up melting and going back up into the...
Or relaminating.
Or relaminating. But it's not going in the main.
Yeah. Peter Kellerman.
So on your plot, though, that you had a solidus that was near vertical, and so if you had a I think you call it a diaphere of sediment come off the slab.
Then you can have a path like that that crosses the solid.
So you have to call it decrease in pressure as it goes to the surface and increase in temperature.
So it will decompress too. It will have adiabatic decompression.
So is the temperature rise fast enough?
I think so. Yeah, I think you will have the compression melting of the diaphere. Yeah. Yeah, that was Peter Kellerman. You don't need to be, I don't know what the word that he said. Like, you don't need to be like completely tied to the PT condition of the slab because things can detach. And he's right about that, I think. All right. Any more questions? So who do you think won here? I think Team LIP won because he was the hottest one. Unless you want to be in the cool side, then you win too.
I mean, Hawaii was higher.
Yeah, so I think Dominique won because she was, you know what she won? Because she was getting her own data and actually like put it in here and modeling new stuff, even though it all was peroxide, but I think she demonstrated like really what you want to do with this. If you want to completely forget about this, fine, but I think the best will be to like some place on the planet that you're interested. Get the data and play with it and put it here and see what you get. And then eventually you can like crack the code and put it in an aspect and make it the most amazing integration of petrology and geodynamics we ever had since, I don't know, the universe. All right. Well, you had a question in the corner there? What happened?
Why is there a correlation between calcium and temperature?
There is no correlation between calcium and temperature. Is there, do you find one? Okay, in all the Gorgona data?
Yeah, all the Gorgona
data. Yeah, I don't know, can I see that? So that's calcium versus temperature. I want to look into that. I don't think I can answer that question right now. I was hoping that after the tutorial I can relax a little bit, and now you show me this diagram, so now I'm gonna be like working on this for the rest of the day. But this is good, thank you. So magnesium correlates with calcium, I guess. All right. No. Okay, but the one thing that we were very careful was to not include silica under saturated samples. These are all silica saturated. No, I think so. I actually have been thinking a little bit about this, also including the tomography stuff. I think there is something interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm done. Thank you. I think you should do a coffee break, yeah. What is the next thing? I pretty much more talk at 4:00. Okay.